Welcome to iRun Radio. Coming up on the show today, one Olympian interviews another.
They can't even comprehend how much we run. But at the same time, I look at what they do, and that doesn't appeal to me up and down the track. So it was neat to kind of get to know each other and how our distances are so different. Yet, you know, obviously the commonality of running is where our passion is similar.
From 465 pounds to finishing a marathon.
Wow, I just did something that very few people think they're capable of, let alone someone like me who never thought he would even begin running 1 kilometer or 5 kilometers, let alone 42.2 kilometers. Yes, I hit the wall, and yes, I was completely exhausted, but I also felt completely elated and probably the proudest of myself I had ever been. Put in perspective, though, I had already done so much with my journey. I already lost over 200 pounds from 5 years ago when I was 465 pounds. So, yes, it was a very proud moment, but it was just one more step in the ladder of amazing accomplishments.
And the powerful lessons of an unfinished race.
I was running along, and right before I got to the 40K mark, I just kind of started to waver a little bit, and then all of a sudden just fell to my knees and then down to my chest, and her and a couple other spectators jumped over and ran out, checked my bib, called my wife Katie, and then medical personnel showed up and, you know, dragged me over to the shade and tried to cool me down apparently, and got me in the stretcher, ambulance, and hospital.
All of that and more coming up on iRun Radio. We're joined now by the editor and general manager of iRun, Ben Kaplan. Hello, Ben.
Hey there, sir. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, feeling great. Exciting times.
Yeah, the Toronto Marathon, the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon is this weekend. Thousands of people participating in that, including both of us. Looking forward to that. Good luck to you.
Yeah, and you too. You too. Exciting times indeed. This is the best time of the year. Each time one of these things goes down, it's always, you can feel it in your bones.
Yeah, and you and I get the pleasure at these events of meeting lots of different people and getting to hear their stories. Why are they doing the marathon or the half marathon? Who's doing their first run at a new distance? Who's running a race for the very first time? Who's doing their 50th marathon? There's just so many great stories, and we get to see all the camaraderie and the support. And as I always say, the great thing about a marathon or a half marathon, any of these events, is that apart from the people who are at the very front of the pack, the elite runners, everybody can accomplish their goal on the same day. You can do what you want to do. I can have the race of my dreams. We can all do that together. It's not a zero-sum game. We're not competing with each other. So we can all get the outcome we want out of a race like this.
Yeah, I love it. And the other thing I would say is I would even take it further that, like, even with the elite people where you take, like, the Olympians, they're still on the same course that we're on. Like, you know, you go to a Yankees game and Derek Jeter and them, they're on a whole different field than when you and your buddies play, you know, down the road in the park.
Sure.
But here in Toronto or in Ottawa or wherever it's at, Vancouver, Calgary, all of these races, you get to see all of those big boys. They go on the same course that we do, and, like, you get to even see them because, you know, they're usually lapping us or, you know, they're doing the back end while we're
right
on the front end. But they're only in running. I can't think of another thing where, like, you know, you rub shoulders or you at least inhale their air as they – by you, but
We don't get to really see them
exciting
for long, just to be clear. It's not like
it's not like
if I was playing second base and Derek Jeter was playing shortstop. It's not quite like that, but you know, you do get, sometimes there's a stretch of the course where you're running in one direction and they're coming back really fast the other way because they're a couple of kilometers ahead of you and they've done the turnaround already, something like that.
Yeah.
And I do remember one time in Ottawa, that used to be, the course is different now, but the Ottawa Marathon, I think it was the first or second time I ran it, and the final portion was a 21-kilometer out and back along the Rideau Canal, or maybe 20 kilometers. And I was traveling in front of the Westin Hotel in downtown Ottawa on the east side of the Rideau Canal, and from across the Rideau Canal at the finish line, I could hear them announcing the winner of the race. And I still had 20 kilometers to go. They'd already done the second half of the course, and I was just starting it. That's the way it happens sometimes. Yeah.
And, well, there'll be people behind you, too. I mean, you know, it goes to what you said at the beginning, that everybody's doing their own thing out there. So, you know.
Yeah.
It's just fun to get out and try.
We've got some great stories to tell on the show today. Krista Duchesne is going to join us. And Krista, of course, is an elite Canadian marathon runner. She's also a mom and a dietitian and an inspiration to so many runners. And she actually had the chance to interview another Canadian Olympian, sprinter Andre DeGrasse, who was on the cover of the latest issue of iRun.
Yeah, and Krista's so great like that, too. She has no, you know, she just brings no ego to affairs. She really, you know, she was telling the guys when she walked into the room with them that while they were preparing to walk out, what she was doing in her hotel room at the Olympics was plucking the gray hairs from her head. She, you know, immediately they break up laughing. And she's, you know, she's very cool like that.
Yeah, she's terrific. And we're also going to talk to a guy that you introduced me to, Stephen Last, who used to weigh something like 50 pounds, and now he runs marathons. He's taken a lot of that weight off, obviously.
200 pounds, yeah.
Yeah, running is just part of his journey. He had diabetes as well. He's gone through so much, but now he's doing marathons and half marathons, and his story is really compelling and powerful.
Yeah, and what's great about Stephen, too, is he's one of those guys that, like, once you catch the bug in Toronto, he is, you did this in Ottawa for us, too. He's so enamored with running and gives it so much credit for helping him turn his life around that he is, like, he volunteers with iRun, and he's a big part of our community, and he loves meeting runners, and he's got his story has been shared in the magazine, and he's got the magazine at our booth, and he's signing copies, and he's telling people that if, you know, if he did it, you can do it too, and he's quite an ambassador.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we're going to share a story that's in sharp contrast to one that we told last week. We talked on the show last week to Jamie Ray, who had the perfect race when she was in Chicago. Everything fell into place for her. She got a personal best. She was really happy with it. And that doesn't happen every time, certainly.
Right.
And Jason Faber has written this blog posting, which somebody pointed out to me, and we've got him on the show today because he ran Chicago as well a couple of weeks ago, and he was managing to keep the pace that he wanted, but it was getting harder and harder. And then the next thing he knew, he woke up in a hospital room. Now, he is fine, but it's an incredible story, and there are many lessons in it for runners. You've got to listen to your body. You've got to slow down if it's not going well. He managed to keep his pace for longer than he thought he would, and it ended up meaning he didn't finish the race. And so, I mean, he writes an incredibly powerful story, so we're going to get him on the show and talk to him about it.
And Jason's story is so fascinating to me because I have found as I've gotten older that I won't, and I remember Malcolm Gladwell saying something about this too, that he was no longer willing to put himself in the pain zone. In other words, you know, some of the Kenyan winners who break the records and things are literally doing this. There's literally a life and death notion of this. Like, they are making money to bring back home to their country where they will feed their families, you know. And when Malcolm Gladwell was a competitive runner when he was in college or whatever, he was like, I will do this until I fall over, you know. I have found with myself, it's like, I don't know. I got two kids. I'm 43. Like, I don't, will I run till I fall over?
Will you go to that uncomfortable place, to the edge? Yeah.
Yeah, and that he did that. And his blog is very lucid. It was it's an exciting read, and I'm sort of impressed. Sort of, it's a warning tale, but it's still like, wow, can't believe you did that.
Yeah. All right, Ben, we're looking forward to seeing you at the race in Toronto. Thank you for being on the show once again this week.
Always a pleasure, my friend.
That's Ben Kaplan, iRun's editor and general manager. We have a great show coming up for you today. Coming up next, we'll talk to Olympic marathoner Krista Duchesne about her interview with Andre DeGrasse. Registration is now open for the Tamarack Ottawa Race Weekend. It's Canada's biggest marathon weekend, May 26th and 27th, with a kids race, a 2K, 5K, 10K, half marathon, and the Lumberjack Challenge, four races covering a distance of 59.2K. It's the event of the year, and we'd love to see you there. Welcome back to iRun Radio. In the latest issue of iRun, Olympic marathoner Krista Duchesne interviews Olympic sprinter Andre DeGrasse. And Krista Duchesne joins us now. Hi, Krista. Thanks for being on the show.
Always a pleasure.
So you had the chance to interview Andre DeGrasse, and I mean, here's a guy who has just sort of burst onto the scene and has this sort of infectious personality, and everybody's excited to learn more about him. So what was that experience like?
At first, when Ben, the editor from iRun, asked me if I wanted to do it, I thought, oh, I don't know. But it was really great to get to know him we have so many differences that I wasn't sure I would connect with him. But yeah, he's a really, you know, quiet, down-to-earth, humble guy who I think, you know, really has it together considering where he stands in the world stage and how he could be the world's next fastest runner.
Yeah, and it's he seems to handle it all so well, which is an important part, especially with the kind of pressure that you face in those sorts of races. And now, here you are as a marathon runner interviewing a guy who runs 100 meters or 200 meters at a time. So what was it like kind of bridging the gap between sprinter and long-distance runner?
Yeah, it was definitely comical at times when they, you know, they can't even comprehend how much we run. But at the same time, I look at what they do, and that doesn't appeal to me, up and down the track, A's and B's and that kind of thing. So it was neat to kind of get to know each other and how our distances are so different. Yet, you know, obviously the commonality of running is where our passion is similar.
Yeah. And of course, it's worth pointing out to people that just because Andre DeGrasse runs 100-meter races and 200-meter races doesn't mean that he only spends 30 or 40 seconds a day training on this kind of stuff. I mean, he still has to put in a lot of time to in his training to prepare for his big events, even if they're short.
For sure. I mean, every athlete has so much that happens behind the actual running itself, and that was one of the questions I asked Andre and the rest of the 4x1 team is, you know, what don't you like about training? And I believe his answer was the weight room. So, you know, everyone has something they don't love. I don't love, you know, my preventative maintenance, rolling and stretching and all my exercises for physio. So I think with any job, there's always something that you have to do that you don't love, but it's the way it goes.
Sure. Yeah. And there are so many pieces to it. Tell me a little bit more about what's in behind all of your running. What are all the other things you have to do to support your running? It's not just going out there and doing the runs that you have to do every week, but it's all the other pieces as well.
Right. I mean, there's so many things that makes an athlete successful and, you know, able to stick at it for a long period of time. Obviously, nutrition is something that has been easy for me being a dietitian, and hydration, drinking enough water and sleep, getting to bed in a decent time and having a good sleep. So knowing, you know, it's not necessarily going to bed too early and not getting to sleep, but knowing your rhythm and how many hours you need and rest. I'm a big believer in the 20-minute nap right after lunch. That just really gives me a boost of energy and kind of wakes me up for the rest of the day. Oh, then there's, you know, everyone has some degree of strength, a strength program or doing weights or, you know, Pilates and yoga and flexibility types of activities. So the list kind of goes on and on and on. But fortunately, over the years, I've just kind of built more in some areas and maybe taken away a bit in others. Cross training, I've been one that does well with cross training. So pool running and, you know, biking or elliptical on occasion to just get yourself off your feet. And yeah, there's a whole list of things, I guess.
Yeah. A 20-minute nap after lunch every day. That's interesting.
Yes. Well, after I had my first child, my aunt, I was getting a sore throat, and she said, which is a sign of me being overtired, and she said, you know, something about there's nothing wrong with taking a nap every day, and that might help, you know, the sore throat go away. And so that from that day on, I, no matter what work needed to be done in the house, I would take a 20-minute nap right after lunch, and I don't even have to set an alarm. I just close my eyes, and I can open my eyes and look at my watch and know what time it will be.
Wow. This is
a big part of your
routine.
Just enough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good for you.
Yeah.
You mentioned pool running as well, and I've talked with others about that. I've never actually done it myself, but I've seen other people do it when I've been at the pool to swim. And that looks, I mean, I understand the exercise benefits of it, but it looks almost mind-numbing to be moving back and forth in the pool.
It's funny because over the years, with my different injuries and cross training, I've had my fair share of pool running or swimming, and I just tried rowing, then elliptical and bike and all sorts of different machines. And nothing compares to running, but I can pool run for hours.
Wow.
But there's other machines that, I've easily, I could do 2 hours of pool running and not bother me. But then there's other machines, like the bike, where I get on and 5 minutes seems to take 50 minutes. So I think it depends on, you know, what you're used to and what you like. And,
sure.
Yeah, pool running is nice to do with a friend. Like, usually when I'm doing it, it's not in place of a workout. It's just more as a way to kind of do some physio exercises in the water, get my body warmed up for a run or recovery after a race. It's a good way to just, you know, do that running motion without hitting the ground and the impact of that. So when you're going easy, it's a great opportunity to do it with someone and chat with them. I mean, there's people I'll chat with for a full hour. That's probably more than I even chat with my husband in a given day.
Well, especially if you're taking a 20-minute nap, that cuts into your... I'm just kidding. I want to talk a little more about all of the things that you mentioned that you do to support your running. And one of the things about running today is that we know so much more about those things and the impact they have. When I think about runners from 40 years ago, people like Sylvia Ruger, for example, they didn't have the same resources available to them. The knowledge wasn't the same. A lot of what they did was really guessing at what they thought would work for them.
You know, it's interesting because I think you can look at a lot of different sports and see, you know, that there's a lot more available and a lot more that we know now. At the same time, I think that sometimes too much is too much, in that sometimes people can't really step back and see the big picture. And I see that a lot with nutrition,
right,
where not necessarily sport nutrition, but we easily can complicate a simple thing. And sometimes if we're always reading studies and looking what everyone else is doing with training, and then you start to doubt your own and you change this and then you want to do this like someone else, then you don't really know who you are and what your program is. So, you know, definitely having more nutrition is beneficial, you know, in terms of carbohydrates that you're going to consume during a marathon. You know, years ago, they drank Coke, and before that, it was nothing. And, you know, even the technology of shoes and clothes, we're not wearing cotton that's, you know, soaking and chafing and
yeah,
uncomfortable. All those things are beneficial to our running. But, you know, look at Jerome Drayton. His record still stands. And he didn't have a lot of the stuff we have now back in his day. So.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think there is a tendency, especially because there are so many online resources now, that people read an article, and you're right, whether it's about their diet or whether it's about their training, you read something and you think, okay, I gotta try that. I got to start eating more of that, or I've got to start doing that in my workouts, as opposed to kind of a slower and steadier approach to sticking with what works for you and adapting gradually.
Exactly. Yeah, I completely agree.
All right, let's turn to how your running has been going lately, because I know when I saw you in Ottawa, you were here for the Army Run, that you I don't want to call it an injury, but you had a little issue that meant you decided not to run.
Right. So in the middle of July, I had what was likely a stress fracture in my foot, just running on rocky roads during a time period that my mileage was a little bit higher. So I basically detected it right away and stopped running. And I had a little flare up in my leg before the head healed. So when I returned to running, and then the foot was an issue, I thought, okay, I need to stop completely. So that healed, and Dave Scott Thomas gave me an excellent, really thorough cross training program. So my fitness was really good returning to running. And I knew that if I had one more setback, that I probably couldn't do Toronto. So if everything went well, then I thought I could progress to have a good race in October. But right before the Army Run, I just did this, just an easy workout, and both hip flexors were tight, and then my right one lingered, and I couldn't even walk without some pain. So I basically knew that if I couldn't do the Army Run half marathon as a test of my fitness because of this hip issue, that I probably couldn't do Toronto. So that's kind of when I knew that weekend. I didn't make any decisions yet, but I didn't run at all, and just, you know, really enjoyed the experience of the Army Run and speaking at the pasta dinner, and just let the hip heal on its own. And then, you know, I got back to doing some easy cross training and whatnot. It healed fine, but I just knew that I had already lost too much running time and I couldn't afford anymore. So the decision was made eventually.
So tell me what else is in your plans in the meantime. I'm sure you've got another marathon down the road, but you've always got so many other things on the go as well. What are you up to?
I've got a lot that I filled my season with, my off season with, lots of other activities. I'm going to take a sport nutrition course in Montreal through the Dietitians of Canada, and Trent Stellingworth will be one of the presenters at that, so that's great. And I'm coaching the kids' cross-country team and my daughter's hockey team. I'm doing a program at work with the family health team called Healthy You, a non-dieting approach to being healthy and kind of staying off the scale. And, you know, the rest of the daily activities with the kids, I'm going to get into private practice again. It's something that people have asked about for a long time, and I just couldn't fit more on my plate, but I'll gradually keep getting a few more clients there. So, yeah, a lot going on, and then not sure which marathon yet, but hopefully I'll do a spring marathon and, you know, do local races around here. I like doing the Bay, and there's the Robbie Burns Run and the Chili Half in Burlington. So, yeah, that's kind of what I'm doing.
Right on. Well, I don't know how you managed to make it all work, but you always do. And I know a lot of runners, particularly women who are juggling some of the same challenges as you are always inspired by it. Krista, thanks for sharing your thoughts today and for being on the show.
Thanks. Always enjoyable.
That is Olympic marathoner Krista Duchesne, and you can read her interview with Andre DeGrasse at irun.ca. Coming up next, an incredible story of losing weight and finding running. We'll be right back. iRun Radio is brought to you by New Balance Canada, whose 806 VH, released this month, is the perfect new road shoe, whether your distance is the 5K or the marathon. The 806 V8 is fast, light, and comfortable. The perfect shoe for helping you reach a new PB. Welcome back. Our next guest is Stephen Last, who has lost more than 150 pounds and has become a marathon runner. He's one of the people participating in this weekend's Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon. Stephen, welcome to the show. Thank you very much for being a guest on iRun Radio.
Thank you very much for having me.
Tell me a little bit about how you got into running.
Well, it started about 2 years ago. I just recently started a journey, losing a lot of weight. I was gone from 430 pounds down to about 290. And at that point, I'd reached the peak of what I could gain just from walking and fitness. And I met a friend who did a few 5 kilometers with me, which I had to mostly walk, and then a 10K again. And from there, that encouragement, that enthusiasm I experienced from not just her, but so many other people I met, just made me want to train to learn how to run. And from there, over the summer, 2 years ago, I went from running a 10K or walking a 10K in 96 minutes to running my first 10K in October in 65 minutes.
Wow, good for you. And so let's go back to your journey before you started running. Tell me about how you lost all that weight and what kind of mission you were on in order to accomplish that.
Well, it's complicated because there was lots of issues, you know, ignoring the fact that I needed to lose that weight and finally being woken up to the idea that, you know what, I needed to do something about it. And once that happened, once I realized, hey, you know what, I'm a lot bigger than I ever used to be, a lot less healthy than I ever was, I decided to begin my journey. Now, the first couple of years, I experienced some false starts, and it took a while. But then finally, I joined a weight management clinic in Ottawa at the Civic Hospital. And they got me started, and I've mentioned this in the article I wrote for iRun. They got me started on these shakes. And the weight loss, I've often said this, the weight loss I gained from those shakes was good. It helped, but the weight loss wasn't the only benefit. Because at the time I had diabetes, type 2 diabetes, not very well controlled, so I experienced issues of, you know, spikes and then crashes, and that's very difficult to get motivated to exercise when you're experiencing those crashes. And these shakes gave me a perfect balance in my blood sugar, which made me feel the best I'd ever felt 5 years previous. And that is what allowed me to get active. The shakes got me, helped me to jumpstart in my weight loss. The information I gathered from the kindness and kind and caring people at the clinic got me going. And just from there, it just kept on going and going.
So you lost 140 pounds doing changing your diet and doing some exercise, including walking, before you started running.
Before I started running, yes.
Yeah. And then what about since you've been running? What impact has that had on your health?
To be honest, a lot more than you might think. I mean, I lost more weight since I started running. I'm down to like 250 now instead of 290. The biggest one, because I had high blood pressure. But when I was down to 290, I was still mostly on most of the meds to control that blood pressure. The running brought, I'm basically off of the blood pressure meds because of my increased fitness due to running.
So running has helped to address that blood pressure issue, so you don't need the medication anymore?
Yes. I mean, the weight loss did part of it, but the running really helped. Like, I'm completely off the medication now.
Well, good for you. And what about psychologically and mentally? What has running meant for you?
Running has given me, I mean, I had so many improvements even before I started running, but overall it has really helped my, I guess if I had to feel good enough about myself to even begin this journey. But since I started running, I've gained a whole new level of confidence that I never really had before. And not just the physical fitness, but the camaraderie, the community of running has just contributed to my overall confidence, my overall sense of, hey, I belong to something now.
You told us about the 10K that you did in something like 65 minutes. Where did your running go from there?
I did that 10K, having only ever run 5K, so it was maybe a little pushing myself a little bit too hard. So over the course of that winter, I worked up to being able to run 10 kilometers on a regular basis. From there, that April of that year, I ran my first half marathon with a friend, the same friend who got me running. I did that one in 2 hours and 10 minutes. And then from there, I met people from the Cornwall Multisport Club, and that's when I really joined like the running community in Cornwall. We've met so many amazing local people in running. And then in November, a year ago, this November, I ran my second half marathon in 2 hours, 8 minutes. But that was a day after I had run a slow 10 kilometers with a friend of mine, which I don't know if you've heard about him. His name is Ian Callan. He was in the iRun 150 for running 150 kilometers for Terry Fox,
right,
for cancer research.
Yeah.
And so it's like things like that, some very inspirational stories, things that I was able to participate in that really got me into, like, I guess I really appreciate because of running.
And then from there, you went on to do a marathon, is that right?
Yes. The winter I spent training for my marathon this past April.
Okay. And which marathon did you do?
The Cornwall Run to End MS. It's every year around the last weekend of April.
And what was that experience like? I mean, put this in perspective here. Only a few years ago, you weighed more than 400 pounds, and now you were training for a marathon. So what did that feel like for you?
As far as the effort goes, it's not a whole lot different. I mean, the gain, like, what I'm able to do is a lot more, but I have to understand, like, for me, when I first started this journey, it was as hard for me to walk 4 blocks as it is now to run 5 kilometers. So as far as like the pain, the soreness that you experience while training, it's nothing I hadn't really experienced. I mean, it's nothing that I wasn't already used to, but the marathon itself was something that, like, what I experienced that, because they talk about hitting the wall, but until you've actually hit the wall, I didn't realize what they meant. And like after the 35 kilometer mark, I was just so completely drained. And if it wasn't because I was so used to walking everywhere, I don't know that I would have been able to complete it. I walked a good portion of the last 10 kilometers, and it was just because I was determined, but also all of the experiences I'd had years previously, the walking, the being 430 pounds, that's what got me through the last 7 kilometers.
Well, good for you. Congratulations. That's a huge accomplishment. Now, what did it mean for you to actually cross the finish line? What did you feel? What did you go through when you did this again, having come so far and having changed yourself so much?
It was one of those things, like having family there supporting me, my friends and everything. I thought, wow, I just did something that very few people think they're capable of, let alone someone like me, who never thought he would even begin running 1 kilometer or 5 kilometers, let alone 42.2 kilometers. So, and at the same time, yes, I hit the wall, and yes, I was completely exhausted, but I also felt completely elated and probably the proudest of myself I had ever been. Put in perspective, though, I had already done so much with my journey. I already lost over 200 pounds from 5 years ago when I was 465 pounds. So, yes, it was a very proud moment, but it was just one more step in the ladder of amazing accomplishments.
Well, it is an amazing accomplishment, and again, congratulations to you. So up next, you're going to do the half marathon at the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon?
Yes, and I'm doing it as much for just the experience. I've never actually run a big race before. Nothing more than a couple hundred people. I've only ever done races. This one will be several thousand, so I wanted that for the experience. And I'm hoping to better my 2 hours and 8 minute time. Maybe I was hoping to do sub 2 hours, but my training might not be quite up to par. But that's okay, because I've learned through my journey that, you know, that kind of thing is okay. You know, it's okay, you know, not to get too disappointed in not being able to do something that
sure.
you were planning on. Just accept it, move forward, and enjoy the experience.
It's a long journey, right?
Yeah. And I'll keep going and going, and it's just something that I've learned, don't worry about lapses. Don't worry about being disappointed. In the end, just move forward, keep going, and you will succeed.
Well, look at what you've done already, Stephen. It's an incredible journey. It's inspiring. It's remarkable. I really appreciate you sharing it with us. Thank you for being on the show.
All right. Thank you very much for having me again, Mark, and I really appreciate being able to share my story with everyone.
That's Stephen Last. Coming up next, a story of what you learn when the marathon doesn't go well. Registration is now open for the Tamarack Ottawa Race Weekend. It's Canada's biggest marathon weekend, May 26th and 27th, with a kids race, a 2K, 5K, 10K, half marathon, marathon, and the Lumberjack Challenge. 4 races covering a distance of 59.2K. It's the event of the year, and we'd love to see you there. Welcome back. We talked last week with someone who had the perfect race in Chicago, getting a personal best time in the marathon a couple of weeks ago. Well, Jason Faber had the opposite experience, and he joins us now to talk about it. Jason, thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So tell me about the initial experience of running Chicago up until, say, I don't know, 30 or 35 kilometers in. Tell me about the day and how it was going for you.
Yeah, Chicago was it was pretty cool. It was my my second marathon major. I ran Boston last year, and yeah, it was kind of just a bucket list race for me. I wanted to, you know, kind of go take advantage of that flat, fast course that you hear all about, and yeah, just kind of run a big city marathon there. I find them a lot of fun. They definitely put on a really good show there. You know, tons of people running the race, tons of spectators, and so it definitely lives up to the clout and the all the fanfare that it gets.
And Chicago's a beautiful city to visit, too, right?
Totally, yeah. I've been there before, so I was really excited to go back. And, just to have all the architecture and all the different neighborhoods. I think they said you went through 28 or 29 different neighborhoods, so you kind of get a really good sense of the culture and the vibe of the city, which is awesome.
And for a time, you were right on track with your goal, which was to get in at under 3 hours at about 2:57. So it seemed to be going well. But I guess from reading what you wrote about the race, you also had you were starting to have some issues, even though you were still running at the pace you intended to.
Yeah, I went in, pretty confident. I had a really good training cycle. I thought I was, fitter and faster than I'd ever been before, and kind of had some good lessons from when I ran Boston in some previous races. So, I went in with a ton of confidence and, kind of that mentality of, it's going to hurt at some point. It's a marathon at the end of the day. So just positive vibes and grit down and power through. So first half went perfectly. It was, nice and cool, not as cool as I wanted it to be, but, still probably like 13, 14, 15 degrees kind of thing. First half was awesome. Things started to get a little bit harder than they should have for me at around 25. I think it definitely heated up, I thought, a little bit warmer than what they had called for. At least that's what it felt like to me. But it was really just the sun, just the sun beating right down on your skin, bouncing off the building, bouncing off the pavement. And it just started to go hard, but I kept hitting all my 5K splits like dead on. So I was like, okay, this is hard, but still got this, still on pace for 2:57, which was kind of what I was going after. I wanted to requalify for Boston, and I wanted to PB, and hoping for all the best in the race. I just kept trying to hang on, and every kilometer got harder and harder, but I somehow, every time I passed the 5K split, I was still right on track. So it's funny. I wrote about it in my blog. My wife and my family and my friends are following along on the app, like most people do, right? And the great thing about the app is that it has the ability to track people. And you can't necessarily see them throughout the course. Has all sorts of great data, but there's no context in the app, right?
Yeah.
I'm looking at the app and they're going, "Man, Chase killing this thing. He's hitting all of his splits, and I'm there just dying and melting into the street and just somehow just hanging on."
Walk me through what happened next, because you basically go from running to waking up in the hospital in a very short period of time. So just tell me what you remember.
Yeah, so, I really remember grinding it out, heading down this stretch, and I can't remember exactly what street it was, but I knew that I had to take a left-hand turn, right? I think it was a left-hand turn right before the 35K mark, and it didn't stop. It was like it just kept going and going and going, and I'm sure I kept looking down at my watch every 100 meters or something, right? Just hoping that you'd get to that next point. And I've been following the three-hour group from Wave 1, which is a couple minutes ahead of me, because I figured, they were 30 seconds under the three-hour mark, and if I had 2 minutes on them because I started after them, if I just hung on to those guys, I was good. So I just kept just dragging at their backs. And then, I passed 35 and looked at my watch, and, somehow I was like, I think it's like 10 or 12 seconds over my split time. And then I don't really remember much else. I think I sort of have a couple fuzzy memories of the next few kilometers, but nothing concrete. Like it's, when you don't know the city that well, you don't remember passing certain landmarks or seeing certain streets. So it was pretty fuzzy at that point. The sun had gotten to me. The dehydration had really, really taken over. And then, next thing I knew, I woke up and I was in the hospital.
And your wife was there, and let's flip this around and share it from her perspective a little bit, as you did in your blog, because she's tracking you, and as you mentioned, she thinks everything's going great, and then all of a sudden she gets this text message.
Yeah, so she had my phone. I had given her my phone to track me, and I'd had a little bit of medical issues when I ran Boston last year, and I made the mistake of not writing my medical info in the back of my bib, right? I was 27 years old in good health, why would I need to, ever do that? And that came back to bite me. So I made the good decision to actually write all my info this time, thank God. And she's there. I think she was at kilometer 41 or so with family. And she's looking at the app, tracking me, waiting for me to cross the 40K mark. And an unknown phone call comes in. She's like, okay, this is a telemarketer, I'm going to ignore this. So she just ignores it. And then 10 seconds later, text message comes in from the same phone number, filling her in on everything that happened. You know, I've been running, I collapsed at kilometer 40, and they were taking me to the hospital.
So she literally gets a text message saying, I'm a spectator, and your husband collapsed, he's being taken to the hospital, you're his emergency contact, so I'm reaching out to you.
Yeah, pretty much. It wasn't, it wasn't medical staff, it was a, you know, there's a woman who was there, I think, watching a friend, and she said that, you know, I was running along, and right before I got to the 40K mark, I just kind of started to waver a little bit, and then all of a sudden just fell to my knees and then down to my chest, and her and a couple other spectators jumped over and ran out, checked my bib, called my wife Katie, and then medical personnel showed up and, you know, dragged me over to the shade and tried to cool me down, apparently, and got me in the stretcher, ambulance, and hospital. And you know, luckily enough, I literally collapsed and passed out, like, right across the street from Mercy Hospital. So my ambulance ride was, like, 200 meters or something crazy short like that. But
right.
As anyone would, you know, she kind of freaked out and, you know, figured out where she was in comparison to where I was and just sprinted and bolted and, you know, didn't really, just kind of told friends and family, I gotta go, and just ran to try to meet me.
So was it dehydration?
Yeah, it was dehydration and I don't think I fully had sunstroke, but I was severely dehydrated. My muscles were cramping pretty bad and, yeah, I don't know. I just kind of have this history with races in the sun, it seems. And, you know, I've been drinking two waters every aid station. And, you know, Chicago, that was one of the things I really was impressed with, was the amount of aid stations they had along the course. It got to me, and I knew it was getting to me. I saw the warning signs. I kind of felt sick, felt sluggish. The muscles started to cramp. My heart rate was going way higher than I'd ever seen it go before. But, you know, I had that goal in mind, and I had my splits kind of giving me that confirmation that, oh, you know, just hang on, you still got this in you, you can make it, and, you know, just five more kilometers or whatever it was, and, you know, keeping up and pushing that hard is really, you know, what led to my demise in the end and, you know, caused me not to finish the race.
And you raised a couple of good issues in your blog. We're told to dig deep. We're told to keep pushing, that a marathon is as much mental, if not more, than it is physical, and that it's a test of character almost. Those are some of the implications and the lessons and the messages we're told, which suggests that when you're really struggling, almost like you need to overcome, that's the test, and that you shouldn't listen to your body when, in fact, maybe you should, right?
Yeah, exactly, right? It's this whole notion of mind over matter, and you know, it's, you know, 10% of the race is physical and 90% is mental, right? That's what we're told as marathoners, as endurance athletes, right? And, you know, we read all these stories from the Scott Yurks of the world or the Rich Roll, these guys who do these crazy races and just dig deep beyond belief and just go through excruciating pain because that's what you do, right? And it's something that I've learned, you know, through my marathons that I've run, of how to deal with pain. And it's definitely, you know, a skill that I pride myself on, but, you know, it comes to a point where you need to kind of to balance it and really, you know, look at it and say, you know, is it worth it, right? And in this case for me, it totally is not worth it, right? I dug deep and I pushed hard and ended up in the hospital and, you know, seriously hurt myself.
And you could have instead said, and I think you put this in your blog, and of course it's easy to say now in retrospect, but maybe the lesson here is when you're confronted with that feeling, you say to yourself, okay, maybe today is the day I do 10 minutes under my, 10 minutes slower than my personal best, rather than trying to do a personal best.
Exactly, right? And, you know, anyone who's run a marathon or any kind of race knows that, you know, typically before your race, you set your three goals. You have your A goal, if everything goes perfectly, what do you expect to achieve, you know? Your B goal, okay, if you know, maybe it rains a bit or it's a bit hot or you're just not feeling great, you know, what's that next level down? And then your C goal is finish the race happy and healthy with a smile, right? But making that decision during the race is hard, right? Especially when, despite the pain and despite the heat, you're hitting those splits and you have that personal best in grasp and you have that Boston qualifier in grasp. Like,
and there's not that much
able to,
further to run.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah, you get closer and closer and, you know, I was just shy of 40K. I was so close, right?
Yeah.
So it's how do you actually step back and take a mental second with yourself and say to yourself, okay, today's not my day and I'll have to go for my B goal. And there's nothing wrong with that, you know? Like I mentioned in my post too, Rob Watson on his podcast talked about that with Dylan White, about, you know, Jack Dillon, who's an Olympic marathoner, how many of your races in your career have gone well, have gone perfectly, right, according to plan? He's at 5%. Like, that's crazy to me, right? And,
yeah.
You know, as marathoners, and I know you and your marathon journey trying to qualify for Boston, it's, you want it every single time. Like, you think you're fit enough, you think you're fast enough, you hope everything's going to go your way, but at the end of the day, there's as I said, you know, there's your plan and the marathon's plan, and one of those two isn't going to change their mind, so the other one kind of has to sometimes.
That's a great way of putting it, I think you've shared a really powerful story. That's one that marathon runners need to hear, and it's just as important and just as meaningful and just as much of a shared experience and a lesson for everyone as the successful marathon where everything went right, if not more so. So, Jason, thank you very much for sharing it with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
That is Jason Faber of Ottawa, and that's it for iRun Radio this week. Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to be back again with more running stories next week. I hope you will join us then. Have a great week.